Hey guys, welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one-stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. This is episode 11. My name is Dave Linthicum. I'm Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-list geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners, and joining me again are my colleagues, Charles Roddy, who's with Cloud Technology Partners, an amazing architect. Good afternoon, Charles.
Hey, David, how are you doing?
And
great,
John,
to be joining you.
You got it, man. I'm very happy to join you. John Treadway, who's SVP with Cloud Technology Partners, principal architect of Passlane, which we'll talk about later in the presentation, and also cloud computing expert, speaker. What else do you do, John?
Oh, I don't know. A little fly fishing, skiing, sailing, a lot of fun things.
And also joining is Bart Copeland, who's actually the CEO of ActiveState. And Bart is coming to us to join us today for our podcast and talk to us a bit about what he's doing in ActiveState and some of the cool technology that he's working with. Good afternoon, Bart. How you doing?
Good afternoon, David. I'm doing outstanding. Thanks for having me.
You're still in San Francisco, huh?
Actually, no. I got back late last night. I'm back in Vancouver.
Oh, is that? I thought that was a southern accent I detected. I would have said Atlanta.
Nope, Canadian.
Canadian, born West. And bred. Yeah, Vancouver's one of my favorite places in the universe. Have you ever been there? It's absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. So anyway, events coming up. I'm done for the fall. So I'm done until the fall, and we'll be announcing what we're doing in the fall in terms of speaking events coming up. Webinars, John and I have Passlane. What's the title of that webinar, John? I forgot.
It's really about application migration. Passlane's just a part of it, but it's really about strategies for moving your applications into the cloud.
So what can you tell the listeners about Passlane? Give us a bit of an insight into the technology.
Just very high level, what we're looking at is code level analysis to understand all of the pitfalls and gotchas in your code that are going to stop you from being effective with this application in a particular cloud environment. So we analyze it, tell you where the issues are, tell you what the level of effort is to fix it, and save you about 20 to 25 or more percent of the migration time and effort along the way. So it really speeds things up and gives you a lot more clarity about what you need to do.
Yeah, and I've never seen more interest in a technology out of the gate than this product. So John and his team have done an amazing job in building that product. And speaking of products, Bart, tell us a bit about what you guys sell at ActiveState and what you do.
Yeah, so what we sell at ActiveState and what we do is pretty much the same thing in the sense that we have a suite of solutions from code to cloud. It's all about making developers and enterprises more effective in their whole development production environments. What's unique to your podcast, David, is that we have a product called Staccato. It's a private enterprise private PaaS solution. Effectively, we like to say we provide the P in platform as a service so the enterprise can provide the S or the service themselves. This is very important because enterprises like to run things behind the firewall. They want to have control, flexibility. And so we built this solution, this platform called Staccato. And it works with any language, on any software stack, on any cloud. And the beauty of working on any cloud is that you have the freedom to run it on a public cloud, a private cloud, or a hybrid cloud. It's up to you as the enterprise to choose how you do that. And one other point about ActiveState, our roots are in open source, and our roots are with developers. And we touch about 2 million developers globally today. And we leverage open source projects. We leverage the Cloud Foundry project to build Staccato. And we sold about 3,000 enterprise customers last year.
So what's been the trend, say, in the last year in terms of private platform as a service, public platform as a service, all of the above? And what are your customers looking for? Why are they they're partnering with you for their platform as a service technology?
Yeah, so I'll start with the last question first, David. The reason they're partnering for us is it's all about security and control and flexibility and to be able to manage something behind their firewall and the freedom to go outside their firewall. That's what you could do with private PaaS. You don't have that freedom with a public PaaS. With a public PaaS, you have an environment which is more hardwired to the lowest common denominator. You need to do that as a public PaaS provider. But enterprises don't like to work that way. So the trend that we've seen with the large financial or defense companies that we're working with, or insurance companies or media companies, they have very large IT groups, many development teams, heterogeneous development environments, and they need a common platform to work with all these teams throughout the organization. So that's been a key driver for us. How I'm seeing the industry is very much the people that the sort of the enterprises that understand cloud and understand specifically private platform as a service. I really see them as innovators and pioneers. This is still an early adopter market. There's a lot of education going along out there right now across the spectrum of organizations. But there's a certain segment of the market that says, I see the value. I've already invested in infrastructure as a service, or I've invested in some type of cloud environment, and now I want to get more out of my application development and deployment with a PaaS solution.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And so, John, do you have any questions for Bart? Or Charles, do you have any questions for Bart before we get going?
Yeah, no, let me go first, JT, if you don't mind. I would just add, and by the way, just for another plug, you can actually run it on a laptop. I downloaded it, and I'm running it on a laptop right now. Yeah, I would just add, I think a lot of large organizations have taken that step already, and they do infrastructure as a service. But you're right, they're trying to accelerate, you know, what the developers can have access to. And in fact, a couple of the clients that we work with, they're actually looking to deploy this and to drive very deep into that application stack and basically do end-to-end provisioning of services for the app team, you know, in like less than 2 hours type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bart, what do you think is kind of the killer application for cloud computing right now?
Oh, the killer application for cloud computing. Well, I'm biased because I'm selling private PaaS. But
well, obviously, there's applications that are built on private PaaS. So what would you think would be the killer application or really kind of the huge use of the cloud computing technology? Well, that's a trick question because according to GigaOm, managing multiple drones in the cloud is actually where we're looking to go. And this is an article from Jordan Novet. Managing multiple drones is harder than it sounds, and Drone Deploy wants to change that. Low-cost drones has proliferated, but is running a bunch of them from one computer has been a challenge, ultimately, and a startup called Drone Deploy wants to make business out of that problem. So I'm a bit into this as a hobbyist. So I've been building, you know, model airplanes and stuff like that since I was, you know, younger. And now with the new electronics and things like that, we do have the ability to kind of go up to an altitude. We can go to a certain geographic location. We can take photos, do whatever you want. And that's what a drone is. And ultimately, we're kind of scared of drones because a lot of the drones we hear about on the news shows are carrying warheads and, you know, missiles and things like that. But there's actually a lot of good that drones can do. In this case, he was building airplanes to go off and photograph elephant migrations and things like that without disturbing the herds. And the unique thing about this is he's leveraging cloud computing really kind of as a way to do it, and the ability to kind of get at access to all of the resources he needs to control the drones, and the ability to control multiple drones at the same time by leveraging cloud-based resources. I don't know, to me, maybe I'm biased because I like this kind of stuff. John, this is kind of a cool application of cloud computing. I mean, I kind of like this story.
Yeah, I don't know why it has to be cloud, but I think it is kind of interesting. At first, when I read the headline, I thought that was really a poor way to describe office workers as drones, but and using the cloud to manage them seemed a little bit too much. But I think any kind of environment where you have lots of parallel activities going on in drone and flight operations and, you know, collecting data and doing all the things that you might do, you know, just in non-military usage of drone technology, it could eat up a lot of compute power. So when you've got a big fleet going around, you're going to need a lot more when things are quiet and you don't have things going on. There's no natural disasters or other activities that you're trying to track or an event. Then you have a lot less. So it's got that elasticity requirement. You've got a lot of different processes going on. So you can manage things very, very cleanly in this kind of environment where, like a single computer, you'd have to make a very large one to handle the capacity. And that's just not very efficient.
Yeah, it is funny, because people who are building drones are leveraging cloud computing, believe it or not, even the hobbyists, because they're leveraging things like Dropbox to store pictures and using cellular modems to basically communicate back on the network. And, you know, I guess the sky's the limit from this, from the hobbyists all the way up to the kind of the lightweight installations doing, you know, kind of research, which is what this guy is all about, or even some of the military applications out there. So, Charles, you're going to get some drones?
Yeah, I don't think so. What surprised me about the article was They didn't seem to take into consideration network connectivity. So I was just wondering, if they had this fleet of drones that are flying around, they lose their network connectivity, what happens then?
Well, there has to be a downlink, and there is a digital downlink they can use that's proprietary, and I don't think it's encrypted. And actually, that was a problem for the military, because you actually could get the software and the signal to monitor the drone video that's coming down. And of course, the military realized that, and they started to encrypt their signal. But there is connectivity back down to the ground link. In some instances, you can connect to it via the cellular network. You know, if you're in the continental United States, there's usually a cellular connection to be had. Or if you're using a digital downlink, it's usually going to be about a 5-mile radius and making it happen. That's probably all they need for this kind of stuff. So, Bart, what's your comment on this? You guys going to promote drone software development on your platform as a service engine?
Well, actually, my comment is twofold. The first one is that when I was reading the article, I kind of had an aha moment, and I hope I'm not trivializing this, but if you look at what has happened with cloud computing and the evolution of cloud computing, specifically at the infrastructure as a service level, effectively what we were doing is providing IT organizations a way to manage a whole bunch of virtual machines in a very effective, speedy way. And what the drone was all about is, how do you manage these drones in the same way? So I look at a drone as equivalent as a VM, and providing a software layer to manage all these drones in a massively scalable way. And that really kind of had an aha to me. And by doing that, then you can put a whole bunch of additional value adds on top of that, and utilize the effectiveness of these drones more effectively, no different than what we're doing in cloud computing today with VMs and getting better utilization out of those VMs.
So if it maps back to a virtual machine, if the virtual machine crashes, it really crashes.
In this case, it does. You're right.
Hey, I got one final comment here. Add a little artificial intelligence and you've got Skynet. So let's move on.
We don't want planes flying around without any kind of human control. Done deal. AppFog melds into Savvis Cloud. Update Savvis will offer AppFog platform in both public and dedicated private implementations to corporate customers. So a past provider, AppFog, bought by Savvis, and I kind of read through this, and I was going to do a blog post on it, and then I got bored with it and decided not to do it. Should I have been less bored with it, Bart?
No, I think you're about on target there. The thing, what I found interesting is that one of the things that we have felt for a long time is that service providers like Savvis and many others are going to want to have a PaaS solution. I didn't expect them necessarily to buy a solution. I expected them to OEM or partner with an appropriate PaaS provider to do that. But I think, to me, what is interesting here is you've got a significant service provider, in the case of Savvis and CenturyLink, saying, you know what, we want to invest in having application deployment solutions as part of our overall cloud offering for our customers. And that's what I found was interesting, is some early validation that this is maybe a growing trend with other service providers as well.
So, John, you've been following the PaaS space pretty closely. Do you think this is going to have any kind of impact on the space? And you think this is a good move that CenturyLink Savvis made?
Well, I think it's a good move in the short run. I think it's a very premature move in the long run. There's so many things going on in this space, and innovation is happening at such a great level. And so the work that Bart's doing, the work that competitors in the open and the Cloud Foundry space are doing, and then there's OpenShift, and there's a lot of different things going on here. So it'll be interesting to see how it fleshes out. And when you get into a place like CenturyLink and Savvis, the question is, will the level of innovation, the pace of innovation that AppFog was known for, is that going to continue, or are they going to stagnate and guys like Bart and some of his competitors are just going to fly right by with a much more agile business model and crush him from a feature and functionality perspective? So while I think it's a great thing because, you know, tier three OEMing, you know, doing stuff with Cloud Foundry, and there's other people doing stuff with Cloud Foundry, including stuff with Bart Solutions, and, you know, that's really great. But in this case, the market is so immature, they may have moved a little bit too early. And an OEM solution story that they might have been able to do a migration on might have been a better long-term strategy for them. But we'll see. In the short run, it's good news. In the long run, not so sure.
Yeah, it seems like everybody wants a platform as a service play if you're an infrastructure as a service. And this is, I guess, CenturyLink Savvis's deal. So, Charles, what's your take on this? You think in 5 years people will care about this? And you think anybody who came to Savvis from AppFog will still be there?
Yeah, I'm kind of agree with what John said. 5 years from now, a lot changes in 5 years, and the technology is very fast paced. And I think, you know, it's hard to keep skilled developers around. You know, I think they'll still find, you know, the Java types out there, but it's really the architects and it's really the people that understand how these applications need to be, you know, created. So that's going to be the biggest challenge. And I also agree, you know, if you look at Google, their GCE and them putting a whole stack together, and they're also, I think they just announced where they have a platform as a service that you can run, you know, internally and not on their cloud. That's an interesting model, again, because they're going after the enterprise, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, 5 years is like, you know, a very, very long time, and things change very rapidly. So who knows? We'll see.
I don't think we'll care in a year, and I definitely don't think we'll care in 5 years. So should we have office pool at Cloud Technology Partners to see who's going to buy you, Bart?
you guys go ahead. Sure. I won't participate. I would.
That's a good one. David, with your platform, though, I'm not betting against you because you could influence the market.
You talking to me or Bart?
No, I'm talking to you. You've got your podcast platform, et cetera. You can start the pump and dump right here and get them going.
Yeah, he's not a publicly traded company, so we can't buy into it. You got to have $5 million minimum, I bet. Anyway, moving to the next story, finding the next AWS, VMware, or EMC, five areas where cloud startups can make it big. And Bart, I think you put this on our radar screen, right? There are third-party data centers and there are private clouds, but there are third option, even better, hybrid clouds. Here are five areas of opportunities for startups in the hybrid cloud space. And this kind of coming to a movement that I noticed when I was at Structure last week is that the investors are out there looking for kind of the next best thing. They kind of view infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, and those areas kind of dominated by a few key players and already kind of overinvested. And so they're trying to figure out what the next thing is. So it's multi-cloud, hybrid cloud, you know, all those sorts of things that are starting to emerge. So what is the next AWS? And should we be even asking that question at this point? What do you think, John?
That's a tough one. I made a history out of bad predictions of long-term trends at something like this level. But, you know, there's so much explosion. I think one area where we haven't seen a lot of innovation and a lot of opportunity yet, but is broadly applicable, is in the security space, which is an area that Charles is a much bigger expert on. But there is probably an opportunity for a very large play there to unify a lot of security domains into a cloud play. It just doesn't seem to be out there at this point. The core infrastructure is there. The core platform players, a lot of that's going to, there'll still be some shaking out of that to do. But then the question is, what is the next thing? I don't really know. Some of these ones that are listed in a GigaOm report about this, these are kind of secondary stuff. It's not AWS scale, right? Secondary storage, analytic workloads, those are all really interesting. But what the big stuff is, no idea.
Yeah, I didn't really agree with this report. I mean, the analytical workloads, I think that's good. But that's breaking out of about 20 different kinds of technologies, predictive analytics and, you know, some of the more big data stuff and supporting infrastructure, you know, on-demand development and test environments. Okay, well, SOSTA software's been out there for a long time. you know, so does it make sense to do that in the platform as a service player to integrate it from an outside player? So, you know, my big things are governance and management. We just don't seem to have enough technology out there to really kind of support the complexity of some of these, you know, large multi-cloud installations we're going to see coming. Do you agree with that, Charles, or you think another space is where you'd make a bet?
Yeah, no, that's actually the two I was going to hit on, the two exact points. So if you look at, let's start with management first. You know, there's very few third-party vendors that really understand how to manage applications that are running in the cloud. That'll change over time as they start to learn how to do that. But the other interesting play there are companies like Atomwise. So they're a managed service provider that runs cloud operations for people, for their customers. So I think that area, I think, will start to pick up. And in terms of governance, you know, the big gotcha right now with governance is really how the data is being moved, you know, from on-prem to off-prem. So there's people out there like Cypher Cloud that are trying to come up with solutions around that, but a lot of the enterprises are still very leery about letting that data get off-premise. So those are the two areas that I see the most room for growth and expansion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think some of the existing companies are going to lead to newer companies, and there's more innovation occurring in that space and different approaches, things like that. It's probably something that's good to keep an eye on. So you brought us a story, Bart, the Phoenix Project and talking a bit about that. So summarize this for the listeners, and let's and I'd love to hear your take on this, by the way.
Yeah. So the Phoenix Project is a book. It's a story. A fictitious story about an IT organization, well, a company and the IT organization and how they're having challenges. And we can all relate to it because we're all in IT and dev and the challenges that organizations have. And this story is about how to look at IT like it's a manufacturing operation. And what I found so compelling about this, and then apply methods of manufacturing to improve the efficiency of how IT works in an organization today. And what I find fascinating about this story is that in North America, over the last 30 to 40 years, we got really, really, really good how to manufacture goods by learning from the Japanese and just-in-time manufacturing and lowering the inventory sizes, lowering work in progress. And the reason this book resonated for me, I started my career as a manufacturing engineer. And my whole initial part of my career was optimizing a production plant. And this book looks at IT like it's a production plant. And it's fascinating to me because I think the authors of the book are totally on mark. And if IT can look at their organization like it's a manufacturing plant and bring in best practices in order to make IT move much slower, because IT touches every part of an organization today. IT is so strategic. There are huge savings for an organization and huge strategic benefits, because we all hear about the horror stories in enterprises today, how IT is bottlenecking, how things can't be done because of IT. So this book really resonated with me, and I don't want to take the thunder from the story. I really encourage your listeners to read the book, because it is a great read and a great eye-opener. And it's something, and what we're doing at ActiveState, we play a small part in really helping IT and dev teams become much more efficient, much more business-focused. And that was the other resonation for me in the book.
So, John, do you think, you know, to the kind of theme of the book, are we focused too much on the technology and not as much on the planning and kind of making this stuff work? And should we kind of go back to the fundamentals with better technology going forward, or should we, you know, continue to kind of, you know, chase all the rainbows that are occurring, that always seem to be occurring in the world of technology?
Yeah, this is what I call the shiny object syndrome. And we do, as technologists, love the bits and bytes of things, and we tend to chase after them on a fairly regular basis. I think it's a good analogy that the factory IT actually comes out of inspired from some work that McKinsey did, and they published some papers on factory IT and how that drives efficiency. And my typical comment to like a CIO at a bank is, well, you know, you have how many people does it take to provision a checking account at your bank? Well, the answer is zero. You do it online, and it's free, no people. Well, why does it take you 10 people to provision a virtual machine? It's the shoemaker's children issue. All the investment has gone into automating the business and not automating the factory that automates the business. So I think it's a great, I haven't read the book. It sounds like a really great, interesting parable. I'll probably get a copy of it and read it. So, but I agree. It's the focus, however, is really about this efficiency and how things are moving more quickly. And that's great. And working through all the planning and process. Really where the big advantage to a lot of IT organizations is going to come from the cloud hasn't even been, it's barely starting the conversation right now. And that's really the area that Bart plays in, which is in the PaaS layer and really enabling developers to be able to be way more productive and to not think about things like VMs and infrastructure and where my database is living and IP addresses and connection strings. I don't want to think about that stuff at all. All I want to think about is I'm writing a piece of code, I want to deploy it, and it should run. And when you get to that level, things really start to accelerate. So I don't know whether the book covers on that part, whether it talks about the agility aspect of it or more just the factory automation and then process control. I'd be interested in hearing more.
Yeah, I mean, it's more the latter point, John. It is about looking at an organization and extracting out inefficiencies, and it's a mindset. So it's much more the latter. But then the question becomes about implementation and how do you achieve that? And things like platform as a service and cloud computing and infrastructure as a service help you get towards making that factory automation a true outcome, sort of, or IT factory automation a true result.
So, Charles, any comments on this?
Yeah, I think it definitely is all about automation, and it's about, you know, process as well. Again, we see with our clients, they really struggle to look at their existing processes to see how they can cloudify them, so to speak. And so as they go through that, you know, through those iterations and cycles, they start to realize that, you know, some of those IT processes just don't apply to the cloud. For example, you know, when it comes to change management, you know, fine, inside of your own infrastructure, you can do change management and change control, but when you're in the cloud, you don't even, you know, own that hardware. And so why would you need to keep CIs and a CMDB up to date and everything? So I think process plays a big part of this.
Yeah, and I think it's good that as we move into cloud computing that we kind of think about the whole holistic, you know, systemic change needs to occur around this. You can't just throw the technology at it. And cloud technology is very cool and very effective, but it's not necessarily something that's going to solve your problems if your problems are indeed process, factory, people, the ability to kind of align IT with business. And sometimes those are the larger issues you need to look at before you start bringing new technology into your shop. Anyway, please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence, which you can find on Softback on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. And check out my blog on InfoWorld.com and GigaOhm Pro. And also, please don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for current cloud news, links to this podcast, and more ways to contact us directly. You can follow me at Twitter at David Linthicum, LINTHICUM, all one word. John, what's your Twitter address again?
It's CloudBuzz, CloudBZZ.
CloudBZZ. Charles, your Twitter address?
CRADI, C-R-A-D-I.
And,
but I do more LinkedIn.
Okay, got it. Don't use Twitter for Charles. And Bart, where can what's your best social network outlet?
Best social network outlet is at ActiveState or via LinkedIn, like Charles.
Gotcha. And ActiveState website is www.activestate.com.
You got it.
Awesome. Looking, go check out Bart's company. It's very cool stuff. Always enjoy talking to those guys. Also, please make sure to support our host, TechTarget. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. And please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back in about 7 days. You guys take care.